So do I go?
Oh, I didn't know that part.
This is worth repeating.
Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Live storytelling from Texas Public Radio.
I came to San Antonio in summer of 1998 for college. Now, I came from a smaller town in Texas, and I was really excited about coming to what I considered the big city. I was a bit of a goody-two-shoes growing up. Honor roll, student council president, even preached a couple of sermons at the local Presbyterian church. So naturally, when picking my freshman roommate, the school paired me with a cigarette-smoking, German punk rock-loving computer hacker. He was exactly the kind of guy my mom had warned me about, which thrilled me. And even though we had differences, Daniel and I, whose name I've changed, Daniel and I got along really well. And he and his best friend, Jack, had grown up in San Antonio and showed me all sorts of things I never would have seen in a town like Corsicana. They took me to my first head shop. Daniel taught me how to download pirated video games from the internet. Jack taught me how to smoke pot out of a homemade double barrel bong. It was a real growth period for me. And one night we were sitting around in the dorm watching public access television as we were wont to do. And Jack said, "Hey guys, how about we head out to see the Toilet Seat Art Museum?" And I was sure I misheard him, so I asked him to repeat himself, and he said, "Let's go check out the Toilet Seat Art Museum. It's this guy who, he loves toilet seats, and he's obsessed with putting art on them, and if we go there right now, he'll probably show us around for free." Now, Jack had said something that piqued my interest, and that was talking about being obsessed. And I knew a little something about that because I had been diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder when I was 10 years old. So we'll get back to the toilet seat art in a minute, because I know that's why you're all here. But I want to talk for a second about obsessive compulsive disorder, because it's a term and a disorder that I think is very misunderstood these days. When I found out I was doing this, I asked a buddy what he thought it was like to have obsessive compulsive disorder. And he said, "I guess it's kind of like having a really lame superpower where you're obnoxiously organized and don't like people touching your things," which can certainly be part of OCD for some people, but that's not all of it. So I asked another friend what she thought, and she said, "I've always thought of OCD as depression's dorky little brother," which I understand. I mean, OCD's not the coolest mental disorder, you know. You don't look at a badass rock star and say, "Yeah, that looks like the kind of guy who counts to three every time he walks through a doorway." But those are the pop culture definitions of OCD. In reality, obsessive compulsive disorder is when someone has obsessions, which are thoughts, or compulsions, which are actions that they feel like they have to do or think over and over and over again. And they may be well aware that there's not really a good reason for it. And they can do these kind of things over and over again, day after day, week after week. And you hear about different kinds of OCD. You might hear about people who are germophobic and they're really into washing their hands. And you might hear about people who are compulsive counters and they count everything and it has to be a particular number. Now, I dabbled in both of those, but it wasn't really for me. My big obsession, my big thing was I was a worrier, and I constantly worried about things, and I would worry about things I had done in the past and whether they made me a bad person, and I would worry about whether I was going to do bad things in the future, and I just worried about all these things all the time until it made me physically ill. And when OCD goes untreated, it can lead to some of the more cool disorders like anxiety or depression, or it can even lead to the place where I ended up, which was standing in front of the knife drawer, wondering which one would leave less of a mess for my parents to clean up when they got home. Oh, man, I'm sorry, guys. See, that's another thing that OCD people are really good at. We're really good at bringing down the party. We walk into a kegger and the Debbie Downer music plays. So it's cool. I'm better now. Prozac's awesome. We're going to get back to good times in a second. Take a sip of your beer. I just felt like I needed to clear up some things about OCD because it is taken lightly these days. I don't think people truly understand it. So, back to good times. We get totally baked on the way to see the toilet seat guy. Now, the toilet seat guy is Barney Smith. And Barney has his gallery in a garage that he's converted at his house. And as we pulled up that night, it was open and on full display. Fluorescent lights buzzing overhead. And there were hundreds of toilet seats. The walls were covered with them. They were lined up like dozens of porcelain crows on power lines. And each one was unique, one of a kind, and decorated with some kind of trinket or doodad or piece of memorabilia from Barney's life. Now, I was amazed. I mean, this was a little much even for me. But Barney seemed like the most at-peace person that I'd ever met in my life. And that night, he took us around on a tour, and he showed us a lot of his favorite toilet seats, like the hornet's nest toilet seat that he made after he got upset with a hornet that bit him on his head, the Chinese chopsticks toilet seat, chopsticks that he gathered from his trips around the world with his wife, and his favorite one, on which he's transcribed a copy of Rudyard Kipling's poem, When Earth's Last Picture is Painted. So we sat there that night, the obsessive compulsive, the toilet seat artist, the computer hacker, Jack. And I realized I'd wasted so much time worrying. And I looked at Barney, and he seemed to have figured out some really key parts about life. And as we talked to him that night, and as I thought more about our experience, I realized that I could sum up what I learned that night with a set of very simple rules. So here they are, and these are, I guess you could call them the Barney Smith toilet seat corollaries, or come up with any creative name, but here they are. Rule number one, find what you love and do it. Pretty easy, right? But rule number two is don't quit your day job. You know, Barney didn't fully immerse himself in the outsider art scene until he was retired. Of course, he was a master plumber, and that's what led to the toilet seats, but don't quit your day job. Rule number three, no matter what you love, no matter what you love doing, no matter what you're passionate about, people are gonna laugh at you for it. Barney knew that. Best thing to do is figure out what they think is so funny, laugh with them, and then get back to it. And rule number four is don't worry as much about the final product as the process. Not all of Barney's toilet seats are aesthetically pleasing. And some of them might be considered a little, I don't know, rustic might be a good word. But when he told you about each one, there was a memory tied to it. And you lived that memory with him. And that's what made it special, because he had fused that memory into his art. You know, if I had to sum up everything I learned that night, it would probably go something like this. No matter what you do with it, life ends the same for all of us. Best thing you can do is find what makes you tick. Find your way of making peace with the world, and then hope that it makes someone else's life a little better along the way. Barney succeeded in that, and by following the rules I learned one night at his museum, I hope to do the same. Thanks for listening.